This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, June 18th, 2008. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, poetry without pretense.
Another friend says, "No, no, my dear. Perhaps you are only meant to speak more plainly."
Grace Paley died last summer at the age of 84. She was better known for her short stories about Jewish life in New York than as a poet, though she wrote poetry her entire life. In any case, she didn't start publishing her poetry until the 1980s, and maybe that's why it's hard to find recordings of Grace Paley reading her poetry. But we were lucky enough to get hold of a recording from 2003 given at the Acton Memorial Library in Acton, Massachusetts, when Paley received the Robert Creeley Award for Poetry. We're going to listen to a few poems from that reading. And I say we because I'm joined by Rachel Aviv, who wrote an article about Grace Paley's poetry that you can find on our website, poetryfoundation.org. Hi, Rachel.
Hi.
So I didn't actually know this until I read your article, but Grace Paley often talked about what a bad poet she was. What did she say about her own poetry?
She said poetry was too literary and she could never be good at it.
Yeah, she got people like Adrienne Rich and Gerald Stern to think that her poetry was pretty great. But what did she really mean by poetry was too literary?
Well, she was really opposed to pretentious language or inflated language. And when she first started writing poetry, she said she wrote in a British accent because she felt that that was what it meant to write good poetry, to be sort of bombastic and highfalutin.
And her models were Yeats and probably Auden, who she actually took a class with
right. In
New York. And what did Auden say about her early poetry?
She came to meet with him so that he would help her improve her poetry. And he told her that she should stop using words that she probably wouldn't use in ordinary speech, like subaltern or trousers.
Because she was from a Jewish woman from the West Village, I think. She grew up and lived most of her life in the West Village in New York.
She was born in the Bronx
and then spent
most of her adult life in the West Village.
And Jews in New York didn't use words like trousers.
Right.
So then what happened to her? She had an enormous change when she turned about 30 years old, I think, which changed both her poetry and her prose.
Well, her biographer wrote that when she had an abortion, it gave her time to begin writing stories. And once she started writing stories, it changed the way she wrote her poetry. She said she learned to use both ears suddenly because before she'd only been listening to the sounds of literature. And then she began listening to the sounds of the street, people on the street.
Yeah, she's marvelously colloquial. Mm-hmm. In her prose, and that comes through in her poetry. Let's listen to one poem. It's called Words, which seems to be very revealing of the type of poetry that Grace Paley did write. And first, she gives a little introduction before she reads it.
We were talking about forgetting everything, and
warrantly, yeah.
We were talking about it. We talked about forgetting words, you know, then people get into an argument like that. They say, "I forget more words than you forget." You know, my husband and I are always arguing on that subject, and I think I forget many more words than he does, but he doesn't think so. And I'm getting really quite out of patience with him. I actually wrote this when I thought I was forgetting words. I haven't come to this point yet, so you know where I am now. But what has happened? Language eludes me. The nice specifying words of my life fail when I call. "Ah," says a friend, "dried up, no doubt, on the desiccated twigs in the swamp of the skull, like a lake where the water level has been shifted by highways a couple of miles off." Another friend says, "No, no, my dear. Perhaps you are only meant to speak more plainly."
Mate.
That was Grace Paley reading her poem, Words. And Rachel, I was thinking the last lines could almost serve as her poetic motto. "No, no, my dear, perhaps you are only meant to speak more plainly." I mean, I'm sure that's a self-conscious line. For a poet who's not terribly self-conscious, she's saying this is the kind of poetry that I think I write best, or that perhaps is best.
Right. When I interviewed her husband, Robert Nichols, he said that one of the things she prided herself on was being absolutely ordinary, And I think that she tried to convey that in her poetry as well. Even in that poem, you can see it, the title is so simple, just words, and the language is really unassuming, and the words themselves don't have many syllables.
Yeah, there's nothing fancy about it. Yeah. And I think you point this out at one point. You say, her language is plain and self-effacing, yet strangely upbeat. Sometimes it's hard to tell whether her poems are appealing because of her language or because she seemed to be such an exceedingly likable woman. And she does have that rare quality that's underrated in writers, and that is charm. She's got incredible charm. Mm-hmm. Do you think she was aware of her own charm?
Yeah, I think that's probably true, that there was an element of self-consciousness. There's something about her tone that seems both very childish and like a little old lady. Yeah. I think that combination can be really charming.
Yeah. Let's listen to another poem that brings out a different aspect of Grace Paley, her political interests, which invade both her prose and her poetry and her personal life. She was a great activist throughout her life. This is a poem called Signs. Let's listen to this along with her introduction.
I usually just read poems. I never figured out how a lot of poets think of all kinds of things to say in between their poems. And some do it extremely well, you know. And I haven't done that, but my husband was telling me I ought to do that once in a while, especially like no one would understand this poem if I didn't tell him exactly what it meant. Well, that doesn't seem right, you know. But I realized I'd have to say that this poem is something about free trade and globalization. And if you don't get it, don't say I didn't tell you. It's called Signs. I don't get it myself exactly. Signs. A man hung a sign above the town. It said, suffering, in small letters. Meaning, I thought, modest suffering. This made another man angry. He had a sign printed in large letters. It said, hope. Meaning, I thought, immodest hope. Then, acres of coffee or cocoa were laid like foreign weather on fields of maize and rice. Under the sun, the desert waited.
That was Grace Paley reading Signs. Now, a lot of her political poems are a lot balder than that one. Mm-hmm. And this was actually, the final image is fairly subtle and I think open for some interpretation.
Acres of coffee or cocoa were laid like foreign weather on fields of maize and rice. Under the sun, the desert waited.
Tell me if you agree or disagree with my take on this. The acres of coffee and cocoa were laid like foreign weather. These are commodities that would be appealing in the West, coffee and cocoa, as opposed to maize, corn, and rice, which are probably the local edibles. In other words, here are Western industrial civilization is imposing a regime on agricultural societies. And under the sun, the desert waited. That's a mysterious image. I don't know quite what that means, except to say the tables may turn one day. That's what it suggests to me. What do you make of that?
I thought it maybe was the opposite, that things weren't changing, and it was like this pretty image of doom.
Or maybe it's a prophecy for global warming.
Yeah.
I don't think so. But this is an unusual poem for her in the sense that she does leave the image really open for interpretation. But there's also the first two stanzas has a kind of a folkloric quality to it.
A man hung a sign above the town. It said, suffering, in small letters.
We just assume that a man could hang a sign above a town and that we don't need to know what exactly that means.
Yeah. It also could be the beginning of a Jewish joke.
Right.
but it doesn't turn out very funny. She makes a very pointed political point. So she wrote a lot of political poems, and she also wrote, especially since she started publishing really late in life, a lot of her poems are about old age. And I wanted to play another poem for you called Question. And this poem actually does something very tricky in its rhetoric. That is, it forces the reader into a very uncomfortable position. This is Grace Paley reading Question.
Do you think old people should be put away? The one red rheumy eye, the pupil that goes back and back, the hands are scaly. Do you think all that should be hidden? Do you think young people should be seen so much on Saturday nights, hunting and singing in packs the way they do, standing on street corners looking this way and that? Or the small children who are visible all the time everywhere and have nothing to do but be smart, but be athletes, but jump, but climb high fences? Do you think hearts should sink? Do you think the arteries ought to crumble when they could do good? Because the heart was made to endure. Why does it not endure? Do you think this is the way it should be?
That was Grace Paley reading Question. Now, I said it's a clever rhetorical poem because for most of the questions that she's asking in there, we want to answer no.
Do you think hearts should sink?
No, you don't think hearts should sink. Do we think that the arteries ought to crumble when
they could do good?
No, you know, we don't think that. But at the same time, reality is going to answer yes to those things. So she puts us in a weird position of wanting what reality can't give us.
Mm-hmm.
But is that how you read that poem?
I think there's also, unlike other poets, she doesn't have the same sense of bitterness about the process of aging. Like, she seems sort of mystified by it. Like, it's
amused.
Yeah, amused. Yeah. It's an interesting thing to watch your body become ugly and weird looking. And
yeah. She talks very openly about having a breast removed.
Right.
And she has a famous poem about sanitary napkins.
Yeah, I think that was one of her earliest poems.
Yeah.
But just the ugly facts of life and bodily functions and different things that don't necessarily aren't pretty enough for most poets, she just lays out.
You can argue that this is a poem that's not comfortable with that because she's putting us in a position of saying these things are not fair. Life is not just. And for somebody who is so intensely concerned with injustice in the world, with human injustice, with political injustice, this is almost a protest poem against nature. I don't know how else to put it. So it could be doing just the opposite of what you're
saying. Maybe because it's earlier in her later poems, Infidelity, she does seem more at ease, or she doesn't seem at the point where she'd be protesting mortality. It's something that she's just witnessing and, like you said, like observing it with amusement.
Yeah, and the poem also does something else. It's a poem about mortality. It's a very serious subject for all of us. Yet it's also making fun of an old person's resentments of the young.
Do you think young people should be seen so much on Saturday nights, hunting and singing in packs the way they do, standing on street corners looking this way and that?
This is how her personality comes through so beautifully in her work, is that you can tell she deeply loves these young people
right.
who are out on a Saturday yeah. night doing what they should be doing. But she puts it in a phrase that, in a way that sort of mocks a penchant to poo-poo
yeah.
an older person.
Mocking like the old lady who's mocking the children.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's a really delightful and charming device in this poem.
It reminds me of a quote. She said, art is too long and life is too short. And I think that carries into her attitude towards writing poetry because she often said she, unlike other poets, would let life interfere with her writing. And if someone in the neighborhood asked her for a favor, she'd do it. Or if her kids wanted something, she'd leave her desk. That's one of the reasons why she could never write something longer than a few pages.
Right. She never wrote a novel. She tried, I think, several times and never
right.
was happy.
And
with
even her stories just sort of ended at 4 or 5 pages.
Yeah. And I think a lot of them rightfully so. I think yeah. they're really dense and wonderful. Thanks, Rachel.
Thanks.
Rachel Aviv is a writer in Brooklyn. Check out her article on Grace Paley on our website, poetryfoundation.org, where you can also find some of Grace Paley's poems. Special thanks this week to Robert Clausen and the Acton Memorial Library for providing the audio of Grace Paley reading from the 2003 Robert Creeley Award. We always want to hear what you think of this program. Write a review in the iTunes store or email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The music used in this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.